following was produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Hello, my name is Rick Cheddar, and this is From Radioland.
Greetings, salutations, hello, hey, how's it going? Welcome to another episode from Radioland from the home office in Memphis, Tennessee. We are at episode 293. How about that? Hey, yeah, buddy, just keeping them rolling and rocking and all that fun stuff here in this little comfy confines of this little show. And that's all it is. We're not out here to solve the world's problems. We're here to point fingers at it and laugh at it and be critical of it. Oh, you can't be critical. What's the matter with you? Of course I can be critical. That's how all this works. If you're not being critical, you're not doing your job, as they say, such as it may be. It's been an interesting week this past week. Today is, by the way, Sunday. It is the 22nd of September when this is being recorded. Back on our usual production schedule, which is at the last fucking minute. How about this business in Rachel, Nevada?
What?
The Storm Area 51 thing. 2 million people said they were going to be there. What, 100 people, 200 people showed up for this thing? It was lame. It was weak. But there was, and it was amusing to see how all this unfolded. But I will tell you this. What I found really the most amusing of it all, coming from my perspective, mind you, is the fact that everybody that was there had a camera and they were aiming it at each other. And it was the weirdest thing because it was like, you know, it was like every vlogger that has a YouTube page was out there doing their thing at the Storm Area 51 thing. But all you saw were people aiming and they're all talking to each other about this whole thing, and they were expecting something to happen. And it was bizarre in that it was a very weird feedback loop, you know what I mean? Or like an echo chamber, perhaps, in those types of thoughts. A circle jerk, if you will. Because what kind of content are you hoping to create if you have all of these people that are doing exactly the same thing by aiming their cameras at each other? I don't understand that. I mean, I come from a different world where content was vastly different, and what was designed to be content was vastly different. And really, the only thing that was really fun about the whole thing was the fact that all the memes that had come out. It was funny. I'm glad I wasn't there. You know, the legit TV reporters, those guys that got sent to this thing, that was every television station that has a news outlet has somebody that does this, right? They have that guy. They don't trust him with serious news per se. So that they send this guy out there. He goes, Harris, you're going to the Area 51 thing. And so you saw a couple of reports from these guys that were out there, and it was just silly. It was non-news. There was nothing to it. I mean, people have been talking about it. It was more of a joke than anything else, and such as it was. And there it went. Coming up on this episode of the program, we're going to talk a little bit about, in a way, television news in an aspect, but video. Because last week we talked about audio. We talked about how the CD should be basically put out if it's misery. There's so many other ways to save your stuff, but it was an interesting conversation, and it developed an interesting chat with some folks that were out there in social media. But this time we're going to talk about the same thing, but the video end of it. I have a little bit of experience, and I also have a little experience with it, but I also have a little bit of a different perspective about that. So, yeah, it's coming up next right here from Radioland.
Get on the Memphis Brew Bus. Every Saturday at 2 p.m., we'll take a 3.5-hour adventure through the Memphis craft brewery scene. The Memphis Brew Bus stops at 3 local breweries for some special behind-the-scenes tours, talks with the master brewers, and, of course, tasting of their signature brews. While on the bus, you'll hear stories and learn about the history of beer. Plus, you'll get some music from the Radio Memphis Library. Go to memphisbrewbus.com and find them on Facebook. The Memphis Brew Bus. We'll drive you to drink.
It seems that there's a bit of a blur here, understandably speaking, because time does move the way that it does. Those of you who are of the age to understand the whole concept of videotape, the VHS, the humble little videotape, has an interesting place in our lives, really, because it seemed like it was the only way you were going to be able to record anything. Stand to reason, you know, tape is tape. It's like cassette. It was a thing, but it was for video. Before that, people would have my family, we had one. We had an 8mm film camera. It was silent, of course. It didn't have like a big lens on it. It was a thing about, it was just about the size of a small movie camera. It was a rectangle. It had like three lenses on it. One that was like normal, one that was sort of a telephoto looking type thing, and one was a little more of kind of a wide angle type deal. And you would buy these little miniature rolls of film about 3 or 4 inches across. And you'd load this into your camera, and then away you went. And you would wind it up. It had a little, like a clock spring in it. And then you'd wind that, and then you push the button, and it would make film. Make a motion picture out of it. And it was silent. And a lot of our childhoods were captured in that manner. Along the way came one of the most interesting things about film, the 16mm film. And what was remarkable about it was, A, it was a wider... That when you're talking about 8mm, that's the width of the film. 16mm was twice as wide. Guess what happens when it's twice as wide? Twice the resolution. It started looking better. But it had something else that was kind of cool with it. It had sound attached to it. So you could record, you know, the kids playing around with the dog in the backyard back in the 60s or whatever it was. Plus, it also gave all the guys at the Elks Lodge a way to watch their porn, because that's how that was delivered. That's how 16mm became a thing. Because... you would buy these gentlemen's magazines, and in the back of them would be their one ads or small ads and stuff. And people, you could, for, I don't know, whatever it was at the time, probably a buck or two plus postage, they would mail you a reel, probably if it was probably about 6 inches, maybe 7 inches or so across, a reel of filmed pornography. And then you would string up your projector, and you project it onto whatever screen you had, a wall or a sheet or something like that. And all the guys would go, hey, look at there. You know, oh, yeah. And that's how that was. 16mm was also the preferred method by which television news got instant. You know the term? Film at 11. That's what that was. They would tease it out throughout the day. They go, hey, you know. The such and such house was had burned to the ground. We'll have the film tonight at 11. That's where that came from, because those cameras that they used, those things were completely different. And I've actually had my hands on one of those. They're big. They're heavy. About the size of a shoebox was the body of it. It had a lens on it, probably about 8-9 inches long. A big lens on the thing. The outside diameter of it, probably maybe 3-4 inches, something like that. It's a heavy rig. On top of it was this dual reel canister that you had a guy that worked in the news department that his job was to maintain those cameras. And they were battery operated. That's how the shutter and all that stuff worked. And then they would have a sound deal that was either synced to it, or it was done in post, perhaps. So nevertheless, some news breaks, and they send a dude with the camera out there, and he hops out of his car, and he runs over to the burning house or whatever is happening, and he starts getting footage of what's going on. Now he records a bunch of film, burns a bunch of film on this whole deal. He's lucky he might grab an interview or two. You can go onto YouTube and see some of those old film footage stuff, because it from local news, it looks a little rough. The color's a little washed out. It wasn't great. They were buying film bulk back then, and it was probably fairly cheap. But at any rate, after the incident, they would rush that thing back to the TV station, and there was the film guy. His job was to process it. They didn't take it to the photo mart and have it all processed, because it would take like 3 or 4 days. So they had a lab already there in the newsroom, and dude would take the canister, and he would develop it. And then once it was done, which probably took maybe 20 minutes maybe to develop it, maybe 30. And then they go into a room, and they would edit it together with the sound, and then they would master it down, if you will, down to another reel. And that reel wound up in what was called a film chain, where they had a film projector that cast the image onto a tube, if you will, a square tube. And at the end of it was this white background, like a thing. And they had a video link right on that. So that's how they got it onto the air. That's how that worked. They were using film chains all the way up through the 80s, believe it or not. But those cameras, as ubiquitous as they were, they captured everything that we all saw. And that was that 16 millimeter fun. Well, you know, at that same time, Hollywood, making movies for entertainment purposes, 16 millimeter just wasn't going to cut it. So up came the 35 millimeter. Yeah, it's twice the 16 plus a couple more. So anyway, 35 millimeter, of course, gave you higher resolution, better looking film. That's the stuff that we see in old film today. You know, from there, they doubled it up again into the 70 millimeter stuff. Remember the big blockbusters from like, I think Indiana Jones, the first one, Raiders of the Lost Ark. I think that one was one of the first 70 millimeter deals, and it looked fantastic. And then, of course, came the IMAX. The IMAX happened. And the IMAX is what, I think it's 120 millimeter, I think, or something like that. It's so big that the canisters have to lay on their side for them to get any use out of those cameras. They've taken them into space. They've mounted them on roller coasters. There's been some cool stuff. IMAX is what it is. It's cool. It's just gigantic resolution. Got to have a gigantic screen to put it on there and a gigantic lens to run it through. But yeah, that's kind of where we were. And then it all stopped. We hit peak film at about the time of the IMAX. And the reason for that was digital began to be a thing. Right. Now, I don't have all my facts straight on this, and this can get, I know this gets really weird and complicated, so I'm not going to inundate you with this, but what little working knowledge I have of this is, goes as follows. Right around the dawn of good digital photography came Sony with their Red camera, the Sony Red, and they still use the thing today. It's an impressive piece of equipment and very expensive. So the movie makers out there, the Hollywood people, of course, we're getting away from actual celluloid film. It became too expensive, and because of the expense of using that, you could go to this digital camera thing. Post-production, you can make it look like film, and nobody knows the difference, and it's a lot easier and cheaper to produce. Right? So you get a $20,000, $30,000 camera. I think they've come down quite a bit on that. And that's how a lot of these movies now are being made. It's all done digitally now. They don't really use film, per se. Although that argument can be made, like we did with audio, what sounds better, analog or digital? Same thing with film. What looks better, analog, film, celluloid, or digital, zeros and ones? Film, I think you can get a lot. You can get a, you know, you get away with a lot more with that. Quite frankly, because of the post filtering, your eyes are a lot easier to fool. There's a simple thing, a little adage about working in film, in the visual arts, if you will. You can have the best camera on the planet, but if your audio sounds like ass, your film's going to look bad. Conversely speaking, you can have like a pretty rough-looking camera, but the audio is great. People will forgive the way it looks. They just tend to do that. They get used to it, you know? It's a funny way to think about things, but that's kind of how that goes. But with the digital thing came all these what they call codecs, right? These are the formats by which digital imagery, digital moving imagery is to be captured and stored. And there's a whole, it's like with audio, you have WAV, you have MP3, you have Ogg Vorbis, FLAC, you've got all that stuff. In video, you've got all that and more. You know, was it H.263, I think is what it is. I'm not versed in all of this stuff. There's MP4, which is really the common one. MP4 is motion picture 4. We have MP3. For audio, MP4 for audio and video, see, motion, whatever. And you've got a plethora of this stuff. And then you've got resolution issues that you've got to deal with as well. High definition by its very name, by its definition, is 1080 by 720. That's the rough end of it. Okay, that would be your minimums. You could say you have high def at 780, but no. But what that is, okay, when you talk about 1080 by 720, people might be going, what is that? What's that mean? Well, I'll tell you what it is. It's the first number, 1080, is the width of the picture in pixels. Okay? A pixel being a very small dot. that the more of those you have, the higher the resolution, the clearer the picture. I'll explain in a second. The 1080 wide by 720 top to bottom. That's your dimensions. Well, that's the minimum of high definition. Most TVs, that's kind of where you're at. When you see something 1080p, that's what that is. It's a 1080 picture. 1080 by 720, maybe a little bit more, give or take. Now we're at what they call, and you've seen this, the 3K or 4K video, all right? That's 4,000 pixels across. That's what that is. So the higher that number, the higher the resolution. We're to the point now you can have a 10,000K video easily. The problem is you don't have any way to transmit it nor put it onto, there's no monitor yet that we're aware of or television that can handle that kind of resolution. Not yet. But your eyes can only see so much of the clarity of the resolution that's out there. So you can kind of hit peak and all that. Now, along the way became the storage. How do you store and manipulate all of this digital zeros and ones? Well, that's where we'll go back a little bit into videotape, because something remarkable happened in the mid to late 70s, even before then in the 60s. Home video in the late 60s was a rich man's game. It required the use of a tape deck about the size of a suitcase. And with that, you had a camera that plugged into this thing, and it probably weighed nearly 30, 40 pounds. But it had three, what they call cathode ray tubes that were in there, in the primary colors, red, blue, and green. And there was a prism type thing that's, I'm being very general, I know, but there was a prism type lens in there that would break up the pictures as it came in through the lens, break it down into the necessary colors, encode that, and then lay that magnetic coding information onto this tape. And this tape was 3/4 inches wide. That's a 3/4 inch tape. That was the industrial standard when videotape came out. Magically, as if overnight, television news glommed onto this thing, because now they could eliminate having to deal with their lab guys in their own news departments to process the film, right? And editing videotape is far easier, because you can literally copy one thing to another instead of cutting and using blades and tape and all that other fun stuff. So 3/4 inch became the industry standard, and the tapes that they used at that point, the cassettes themselves, were probably about an 8 by 4 inch size box, you know, with about an inch deep, inch high thing with a little flappy door in it, like a video cassette. But they only held about maybe 15, 20 minutes of tape on there at a time. So you're constantly having to shift out tapes. The reason being is that the higher the speed that tape moves across the head, I know I'm going kind of quick because I'm on a limited time. The higher the speed the tape transfers across the head, the higher the resolution, the better it's going to look. Well, for home purposes, for you and I at home who want to, I don't know, videotape something for later that seeing on the TV, we would need, if there's a movie, you're not going to be at home swapping out tape, so you needed a tape that could handle it. So out comes the VHS, right? And the VHS, it was a video home studio, I think is what it stood for. And with this, A, it would travel at a slower speed, and B, you could get a lot of, if you could get like 4 hours on one cassette, so you could tape a movie quite easily. Well, at the same time, I believe it was Sony, came out with Beta. All right, Beta was a smaller tape, smaller thing, but their big selling point was that the quality was much better, because it traversed at a faster speed. Television news quickly went from the 3/4 down to Beta. When I got into the business, we were doing both. We were in that transition when I was in. And Beta was cool, because even though you still got up the same 15, 20 minutes per tape, the visual quality was stunning. And the cameras were a little cheaper in price. They were still big, but they were all contained now. You didn't necessarily have to carry around a shoulder-mounted deck. You could slap the tape into the camera itself, throw it over your shoulder, and away you went. So eventually, there was that argument of people that have Beta systems at home versus VHS systems. And which one would prevail? Well, obviously it was the VHS. You know why that was? I'll tell you why. I'll tell you how that happened. In the back of certain gentlemen's magazines and men's magazines, you could order pornography just like you could with the film industry back before then. But they were selling it all on VHS because it was cheaper and you could get more bang for your buck, pardon the term, pardon the pun, but that's how that worked. And Beta died. It died a horrible death because of what had happened. Well, that didn't last too terribly long because around the same time as the CD, the immediate thought was, we got to be able to translate video onto a disc as well. Now, granted, there was the laser disc, about the size of an LP record. It didn't go well. The reason why, DVD came along and was much smaller, compact, and a hell of a lot cheaper to produce DVDs. Blockbuster Video, starting to see their lives, you know, come to kind of a weird end. We're still renting out VHS tapes when you went to their places, but there was also the transition into DVD. So that happens. Along the way, Netflix gets into the game by saying, hey, sign up with us for so many dollars a month. You tell us what movies you want, and we'll send them to you. And there was no late fee. And when you're done, you put them in the self-contained envelope, and the Postal Service carries it back to the mothership, and away you go. That was fantastic until streaming came along, and we'll get to that in a moment. But shortly after the DVD had come out, there was this whole different other technology called Blu-ray. And Blu-ray, as the name would imply, involved a different type of laser system, and that's how CDs and DVDs and Blu-rays work. There's a series of little laser guns, if you will, inside. There's like usually two or three of them inside of a CD player, and it's reading the code that's been imprinted into the disc, and it sends that signal to a small processor within the player and retranslate to the actual visual images that you see on your screen. Blu-ray came around as a better way to have higher resolution video, and it forced people to be kind of in the crossroads yet again, because those of us who had, say, a copy of the Godfather series on VHS have now found ourselves buying them in DVD, and now out comes Blu-ray, and the stuff is completely remastered. It looked fantastic. And now I have to go out and buy it again. And people got kind of put out about that for legitimate reasons. Until the Blu-ray people said, hey, their market was starting to soften a little bit. They said, you can play your DVDs on a Blu-ray player. Boom, sold. Everybody jumped on board, and it was the biggest thing. And it put the DVD thing kind of out of business, because then Blu-ray came along. It's to the point now here in 2019, if you needed a Blu-ray player, you can go to Best Buy or anywhere and get one, and they're cheap. I think if you buy a toaster, they'll probably give you one now at this point. Besides, the disc drives that you have in your desktop computer, you know, the one that you can put a game in or whatnot, those are also Blu-ray players where you can sit and watch something on your screen. How did this come about? Well, at the time, there was what was left of the mail order porn industry had settled on Blu-ray as being the superior outlet because their pictures looked much better. They were much cleaner. They were much clearer as what DVD was doing. DVD still looked pretty good, but to a practiced eye that had seen some good Blu-ray content, the resolution was impeccable. And thus the DVD found itself sitting on the shelf. See a pattern here? Oh, my friends, it gets even more involved with that, because now the big battle became streaming. And out comes all the codecs and everything that you have to deal with when it comes to dealing with video. And really all you're doing now is you're wrangling numbers. It's zeros and ones. It's no different. What the final product happens, whatever film or movie or whatever it is that you've made, that video project is thus saved as such, as a completed piece. And then you can upload it to a playback service like YouTube or Vimeo or a couple of others that are out there. And it plays back, and away you go. You can change the resolution depending on how you show. A little pro tip for you. Check out the resolution on your cameras and stuff and make sure. I'm not talking like your phone, because that's a pretty set deal. But if you've got like an actual video camera that uses a memory card, set your resolution to the highest you can. Because once you get it into your editing system, you can dumb it down, but you can never go up. So if you shot it in shitty format, you can't put lipstick on it and make it prettier again. It just doesn't work that way. And so anyway, streaming is the thing. It's everywhere. People cut their cable systems off. They were streaming stuff straight off the internet, and all of a sudden everything became more accessible to me. And it wasn't just me having a box set of the Godfather movies, for example. Now I can have everything right at my fingertips. Pretty much, we are right now pretty much in the state of mind where every commercial motion picture ever made is available online somewhere. Think about that for a minute. When the actual first photograph camera came out, we were not making that many pictures because it was a pain in the ass. Now, every day, every single day, today, we will have taken more photographs, more pictures than the entire history of mankind from the beginning of the camera to yesterday. Guess what's going to happen tomorrow? Even more. We'll take even more pictures tomorrow than we did throughout the history of mankind. It's fascinating to think about that. And now video is starting to become the thing too. There's a lot more of it. We're taking more motion pictures now than have ever been produced in the past. All thanks to this digital technology. Now, much like audio, we've kind of hit that ceiling. We've hit that peak. How do you improve it? You don't. You change the codec a little bit where it's now an issue of data management, if you will, so the storage of data. Same thing with video. How do you do it? It's sort of the same thing. But there was now we can keep going up in resolution. We'll bring in the humble 4K camera again. So what's the big, what are you going to do after that? 8K. What's after that? 16K. See how it doubles. But the problem with that is the human eyeball can only expect so much resolution without it being, you know, mind-numbingly painful because if it's too clear, and that's a problem with audio. You can actually have something that is too clean and you can create what is called listener fatigue. This is a phenomenon I was obviously wasn't aware of until the digital world came around. Because that's a thing. It's a real thing. The same thing happens in video. You can get visual fatigue from the same thing. It gets tiring to watch something because the resolution is too clean and too pure. I'll just sit here and rest my eyes. So the next big thing that came and then failed, and it failed miserably, was 3D. Yeah, 3D was the thing. So we were going to have to figure out, because 3D's been around since the 50s, of course. You go to a movies and they give you the glasses. One side was red, one side was blue. And when they made the movies, they had two cameras, or not two cameras, they had two lenses. Well, we're recording into two separate rolls of film, but one was predominantly red, one was predominantly blue, and they were slightly offset. So when you put the glasses on, it blended it back together, and your brain did the work, and it made it feel like there was an object directly in front of you, when in fact there really wasn't. That's how 3D, the early days of it. Now it's used what is called polarization, something very similar to that. You can take an old movie and turn it into 3D, and it looks crummy and all, but the idea was that how about having 3D stuff at home? Well, ESPN tried it out with ESPN 3D. That's how, believe it or not, ESPN 3 was going to be ESPN 3D. So they had it split screen type deal, and you had to wear a special pair of glasses that were like $200 a pop. And you had to sit directly in front of your TV to get the right effect. And out came NASCAR races in this thing. And it was like, they're coming at you. They're going to hit you. They're getting you. Nah, whatever. Well, nobody bought into that because they thought it was dumb. And it gave people headaches. Movies I could see would be kind of fun to do. But still, 3D movies at home, no one's doing that. Uh-huh. Why is this, you say? Virtual reality came in and took a lot of that business away, because virtual reality then became something vastly different. And how this works is thus. I'll explain. It's usually done with a camera with a really, really wide-angled type of lens, or in many aspects, a ball, a sphere. Okay, you would suspend a sphere or put it on a stand, and it'd have like 12 cameras all around it, all feeding into different areas. And what would it would, it would take a processor. So when you strapped on the goggles and you turned your head, you were actually getting the sensation of looking around a room, or looking around a, looking up, looking down. When you walked forward with them or moved forward, you got the sense that you were in this space. Well, that takes 3D and blows it out of the water. Oculus Rift is the company that became, I guess, sort of synonymous with home virtual reality. A lot of people are having a lot of fun with this thing, but still, it's still kind of slightly out of a lot of people's price range. The reason being, software keeps getting better and better. So once that begins to stabilize, you'll see the price of that come down. What sort of things can you benefit from this? Well, it certainly takes a whole different spin on video games, that's for sure. And to a certain extent, a lot of videos. You could imagine being able to put on your Oculus Rift glasses and going to the Smithsonian, if you will, in a virtual sense where you can literally look around an object, look, you know, a little more closely at things. It adds a new twist that you necessarily wouldn't get in three dimensions, even though it is a 3D image. But it's virtual reality. That means that any haptic move, right? You know what that means? Every time you move, you get a response in that environment to give you the sense that you're actually there. These goggles come with like an earpiece type thing, so it plays with the spatial separation of sound from left to right. It's fantastic. It's a great idea. So let me tell you how 3D died. Or 3D. How did 3D die? It was simple. Various websites that work in the realm of streaming video, right? They said, hey, we've got an idea. Why don't we stream the VR video to your device, and you can actually be in the video. The porn industry jumped all over it. 3D died. Virtual reality went up. Now, for those of you that have been paying close attention, there's been a common theme throughout all of this technology that we've gone through, and that is the porn industry. I've talked about this before on the air, and I think Jeff Janowitz and I have had a lengthy conversation about it, but it is legitimate. And the reason being is this. People consume more pornography than anything else when it comes to short-form video, or even to a certain extent, even some long-form video. Now, big blockbuster Hollywood things, they're not going to compete. That's a whole different deal. But the pornographic industry had always been on the forefront because they always wanted to show their product, if you will, in the best sort of light they can. 3D did not work in the porn industry, namely because people thought that they were seeing too much. Imagine the hedgehog naked, you know, in 3D. Do you really want to see that? Do you want to see all the scars? Do you want to see the sores? Do you want to see? No, you don't. But in virtual reality, you can be sort of in the thing, right? And that's what has made VR technology the next go-to thing. Is it going to last? If they can find a way to make virtual reality work without the glasses, it might. Actually, 3D could make a comeback if you could do that. If you could develop a television that did not require glasses for you to experience the three dimensions. There's some say that they have, and it's still ridiculously expensive to get into that sort of thing. But this is how our technology, our television, our video technology is progressing, and it's all done through what the guys in the porn industry are doing. Isn't that something? Something to think about. Man, you're not going to believe what I just learned today. Well, you know, it's never too late to learn anything. And by God, if you've learned something today, you've learned that.
It's summertime, and Wizards has all your outdoor fun covered. Memphis' number one alternative smoke and vape shop is your CBD headquarters, but they're not just a CBD or smoke shop. Novelty t-shirts, hats, sunglasses, and more. New stuff in the store every day. Woodwick candles, silver jewelry, tapestries and candles, and really cool backflow incense burners. Great deals throughout the store. $19.99 Madison Avenue, open 10 to 10, 7 days a week. Online at memphiswizards.com. Wizards, because it's still smoking. Must be 18 or older to buy smoking-related material.
Here's what's coming up on the next episode from Radioland with Rick Cheddar.
It can be a little bit of a side effect, if you will, of social media, but having the ability to comment on certain things doesn't mean you necessarily should. You know what I'm saying? Because really what we're seeing, we're judging our whole world on what people are thinking or saying about certain things. Therefore, most being negative, seems that the earth is going to shit. And it is in a climate sense, but politically speaking, there's a lot of that as well. There's a lot of crap that's out there. And all we tend to see is the negativity becomes even more amplified across social media. People people seem like they're being more of an asshole because that's really the only ones that are commenting on these things. They're the assholes that are out there. And because of that, we start thinking that there's more and more assholes. When in reality, there's always been proportionate the same amount of assholes as there are to people that aren't. I know, it's kind of crazy. But it's the way it works when you're thinking along the lines of a keyboard cowboy. These guys, they don't care about anything but trying to find a way to piss you off.
For previous episodes, go to radio-memphis.com. To download episodes to your mobile device, search the show in iTunes, player.fm, stitcher.com, Pocket Cast, or TuneIn. And now, here's more with Rick Cheddar from Radioland.
Right, you heard what's coming up next time on the program. Coming up in a moment, your unpopular thought. A quick note about if you're listening to this program here on Sunday, the 22nd of September, tonight at radio-memphis.com, if you happen to catch this show, if you're listening to this before 8 p.m. Central Time, head over to radio-memphis.com at 8 o'clock for the Booze and Blues. We have a very cool show happening for you. There was a blues guy in this town by the name of Papa Don McMinn, and Don was great. Super guy. I had the great fortune of meeting him on several occasions. Wonderful man, and his entire family were nothing but musicians. They're the whole family. And when Don passed away, the Memphis Blues Society put together the Papa Don McMinn Musicians Fund, which, you know, Don was one of those guys that always wanted to do good by other musicians. Just the way he was, a giant heart of a guy, sweet soul, just a lovely human being. And his children are, of course, still playing. So we have tonight the Papa Don's Blues Babies. They will be in studio. Now, the youngest is like, I don't know, 35, 40 years old. So they're all going to be in the studio tonight. We're going to have a big time this evening. That's at 8 p.m. Central tonight at radio-memphis.com, September the 22nd. If you've missed it, chances are in a week or so you'll catch it on the on-demand a little bit later on. So there it is. I just wanted to get into that. All right, real quickly, your unpopular thought for this time out. The hard seltzer waters are horrible. They're disgusting. I know people are going crazy over this White Claw stuff that's out there. You know, there's a market for it. It's wag the dog is really what it is. You've got corporate America that is telling you what you should have and what you should be doing. Salt Life is another one of those things with a clothing thing. They've now got a line of beer. And I'm sure it's just disgusting, but they're just selling you on the notion of what is supposed to be your lifestyle. Your lifestyle should be this. It should be that. You should wear this. You should smell like that. You should have these shoes. You should have this hat. You should drink this beverage if you want to be cool. We've been fighting this fight for God knows how long, and they come and they go and they become trendy, and yet they're not. But some of the mainstays that don't ever push that whole thing are still going to be around because they're into like, hey, you know, if you're going to be smart, you make a beer or you make a bottle of liquor that says that their whole thing, our job is to get you effed up, and this is what it's going to be. And if you stuck to that model, you're going to be fine, because if that's what you want, that's what you're going to get. I'm not trying to sell a lifestyle. It's nuts. All right, kids, look, I got to go. I got to wrap it up. Thank you again for being a part of the program. Please share it if you've liked what you heard here and maybe perhaps learned something. And, you know, we'll do it again next time. So until then, please take care of yourselves and take care of one another. And for God's sake, stop shooting each other, okay? I'm Rick Cheddar, and this has been from Radioland.
Rick Cheddar from Radioland is produced by Pirate Radio Studios Incorporated, Memphis, Tennessee. All music performed during this episode was used by permission. No part of this program can be rebroadcast or used in any other way except by written consent. For bookings and other inquiries, you can write the show by sending an email to radioland@pirateradiostudios.com. For more, go to radio-memphis.com.